to begin with, the Vatican only came into existence in 1929. Okay? The contracts that our country has are with the Holy See. Okay? Prior to 1929, the Vatican didn't exist. Period. Okay? It was a new development, a new way of structuring things, and it basically is a property management organization for the Holy See. And that's why when you saw Pope Benedict step down, he kept his ministerial office. That means he kept his holy office, he kept his sacred office, okay? So what does that leave? That leaves Francis in the position of being the pontiff and trying to sort out all the business end of things, okay? I mean, it's 100% fraud from there on in. It's just a story of employees bilking their employers under the table. And it's really quite horrendous. And they're doing this with the full knowledge of the Queen and the Pope, who are the actual international trustees that are supposed to be riding herd. And that's why I went to the Queen, and that's why I went to the Pope.
Most of my listeners have heard of the amazing antioxidant and immunity building benefits of C60, but what you may not know is how amazing black seed oil is as a carrier for C60. Black seed oil has been called the miracle herb by the National Health Institute because of all the health benefits, such as anti-inflammatory, anti-diabetic, and so much more. That is why I personally take the ultra pure 99.99% C60 in black seed oil. It's now available in gel caps, so no more slurping down that disgusting oil. Listeners can get Live Longer Labs' patented Ultra Pure No Solvent C60 at exclusive discounted prices now at my shop. Go to sarahwestell.com under shop and learn more.
So now, why would the Holy See be helping us and the Pope cooperate? Because the Pope is benefiting, and so is the Queen. So the Queen and the Pope would not want to help the Holy See, I would think. So what's going on there politically, and why would the Holy See help us?
Well, they're both in bed together. The Queen works for the Pope.
Yeah, so the Pope and the Queen are together. They're benefiting from our setup right now. The Holy See is helping you change it. Why is the Holy See helping you? If the Pope and the Queen, they wouldn't have any incentive. So what's going on?
One man, Pope Benedict, wanted to help us. He wanted it to be straightened out. He wanted to honor the trust that was placed in the Holy See. Since then, all Francis has done is circle the wagons and try to continue the same old game. So, you know, the hope and the help that we had from Benedict was then and was with him.
But you said that Benedict is still in charge of the Holy See, as far as you can tell.
As far as I can tell. But, you know, once that veil shuts down, you just don't see behind it. I think, so far as I know, he's still in charge of the Holy See. But that means that all this other stuff that's happening, all this financial rot, all of these political maneuvers, all of that stuff is being handled by Francis and the Vatican. Two different animals. They just bifurcated it some more. Instead of one man wearing two hats, you've now got two men, each one with a separate hat.
Okay. And I've heard both Francis and Benedict are bad guys. You know, like bad guys. And in your experience, why would Benedict used to be in charge of both, is what you're telling me, Vatican and the Holy See, and then he stepped down from the Vatican and Francis just took over the Vatican and not the Holy See. Is that accurate?
So far as, well, and there are a lot of things that indicate that being true. I mean, I'm out of my hat on that one.
You cut out there for a second. You're saying there's a lot of things that you've seen and documents that you've seen that point that that's true.
Well, for example, when Francis signs documents, he signs as Franciscus. It's all capital letters, and it's Franciscus. Okay, that's a different person. That's a different persona. That's a corporate entity. Okay, that's not a man signing his name. All right, he's a Jesuit. Jesuits take their oath to obey the Pope. So how can a Jesuit be a Pope? And there's more. I mean, a Pope will accept obedience. He will have people kiss his ring in obedience to the law of the church, right?
Yep.
Francis doesn't do that.
That's so interesting, because you're confirming what I've heard from other people on this channel, Kevin Annette and other people who have just gotten smeared. But yeah, interesting. Okay, keep going.
But there are reasons why, if you look at this, you know that there's a bifurcation there, that Francis is operating in a different capacity than Benedict was. And you know that everything is not business as usual at the Vatican. There is wave after wave after wave of financial fraud investigations. The Italian police have been called into Vatican City on numerous occasions. There's all sorts of upset stuff going on. So, I mean, it's...
Who's calling these investigations, would you say? Is Francis calling the investigations, or are the investigations upon Francis?
It's a whole range of things. It's a zoo over there. I mean, they have internal investigations. They have external investigations. They've got charges pending against all sorts of people for all sorts of various kinds of wrongdoing. And, you know, everybody hears about the pedophilia and those sorts of things, which, of course, are very sensational kinds of charges. But there are all sorts of other things that go on, too. There have been major, major financial scandals that have rocked the Vatican Bank to the core. And we've had a succession of bankers that have had to come in there and try to deal with it, and then... You know, they don't seem to last very long, you know, a year or so, and they're gone. So,
and they're not, they're gone, they're fired, they're removed, or are they not living anymore?
They quit.
Okay.
And it's because it's an impossible situation. It's just, you know, you have a tremendous mess. I just call it the mess, and nobody seems to know what to do with it. And so just getting organized to a point where you can clean up the mess is basically where we're at on the American side of it. And the church is going through its gigantic upheavals. But my observation is that there's always been a criminal element in the church. And that criminal element, has been, you know, it's been fostered and used the church almost as a storefront. You know, it hid away in the church and continued over centuries. And now it's trying to move its storefront from the Roman Catholic Church to the United Nations.
So do you feel that Agenda 2030 or 2050 is part of their plan, or is that something separate?
Right, that's all UN Corp. And the United Nations is a whole separate thing from the UN Corp. It's the same kind of name games thing that we've seen here, where the UN Corp was established in France during the Second World War by Vichy French, by Nazi sympathizing French. So a full 2 years before the United Nations organization was chartered, you already had the UN Corp. And the UN Corp is a nasty, nasty, vicious Nazi corporation. It's a commercial corporation.
Who benefits from that?
So that's,
who owns it and benefits?
Well, I have it on good authority that Pope Francis is the... majority stockholder in the UN.
Like he personally is, or the Vatican is?
The Vatican.
Okay. The Vatican keeps popping up. Okay, now what can we practically do from a practical perspective to make a difference here? I mean, let me back up a little before I ask that question. Does Trump know about this? I mean, can a president run a country and not know about this?
Oh, he didn't know. Nobody told him. He just walked in.
Well, wouldn't he be running into walls and all sorts of stuff going, why isn't this working? And I mean, wouldn't he be questioning and trying to figure, I mean, wouldn't it become kind of an obvious obstacle?
Sure. Absolutely. He walked into a situation where he was taking over two bankrupt entities. He was taking over a bankrupt municipal government corporation that was in Chapter 7 being liquidated, and he was taking over a reorganizing territorial corporation that was in Chapter 11. I mean, he's looking at this as a businessman coming in and restructuring and reorganizing things to get these corporations properly taken care of, right? And he's a brilliant businessman. So, you know, that I'm sure that from his perspective, that was his job and he was competent and he just went for it and did it, right? That's his skill. But, you know, all this other internecine stuff and history and, you know, the fact that the military was complicit in it and that the civil government was substituting for the civilian government and all of the money that's been racked out of this country and, you know, the way the people were being mischaracterized as British territorial citizens and then sold to the Pope. All of that stuff he couldn't be expected to know. And I'm sure he didn't know all of the history about the Civil War. He was probably like all the rest of us who went to school. And when it came to the Civil War, you were told about the Reconstruction. And I don't know about you, Sarah, but certainly I recall being in 8th grade and again in 11th grade studying U.S. history, and we touched on the Reconstruction. And I had the very definite impression that that was all done and taken care of and over with, you know, at the time of the Civil War, and that it, you know, was a few years after the Civil War, maybe 20, 30 years after the Civil War, and then the Reconstruction took effect and we were all back to normal, right? That isn't what happened. Well, the key point is that the Reconstruction was never finished. That's the big take-home point. And so a third, and the most important third of our federal government has been missing in action since 1865.
So from a practical standpoint, if we decided we want to just stop our government from being dormant, we could do that pretty quickly, couldn't we? And reestablish ourselves?
That's what we're doing. That's now, what I'm doing here.
Well, I know, and you're doing it and you're fighting, but is it if people became aware and people were helping you, wouldn't it go out? I mean, could it feasibly go very quickly?
Absolutely. We've already got 40 states up and rolling. You know, once people really understand that they have to choose their political status and here are the choices, and, you know, here's your state, do you want to populate it or not? They just hop over the fence. They're ready to go. And, you know, it's a little disorienting because it's information that they've never had before. But now that they have the information, they can see where they fit, that they are the actual legitimate government of this country and that their state is the proper venue or the proper instrument for them to exercise their power.
There's another group that's doing the exact same thing as you. What's the difference?
You're talking about the nation states. The problem with them is that they're including everybody in off the street without correcting the political status. And we've all been, there are records, falsified documents and records about each and every one of us that surrounded our birth and all of the stuff that went on at the hospital, that has to be corrected, or you can't act in your proper political status. You can't be a U.S. citizen and operate as a state citizen at the same time, because the states require a singular, one only, political status. So, you know, if I want to act as a state citizen of Wisconsin, I can't be at the same time claiming to be a German or to be a U.S. citizen or to be an Algonquin tribal member. I have to make a decision. I have to choose my political status and act within that and declare it. Because they've already falsified the record saying that I'm a British territorial. And so until you get your own.
Okay, so have you had judges and government officials and lawyers and those people start realizing and wanting to join this?
Yes.
It's pretty much a whole spectrum of people.
Yes, absolutely. And many of them are more rabid than I could ever be, because they feel that they've been lied to and cheated and that they've taken part in crimes unaware.
Yeah, that would be frustrating. So are they also becoming spokesperson people around the country trying to educate people?
Yeah, we got a lot of people that are active at a local level and at a research level and at an informant level, where, you know, they're grabbing their piece of the elephant, you know. And now that we're working together, it is going faster and better, but we continue to have some problems in that, like I say, someone grabs hold of the elephant's tail and they think that it's this. And, you know, so we continue to have this discussion of what to do about it. But the history is clear. We know how the states are organized. We know how we have to declare our political status in order to have the political status and standing to operate the states as an assembly. And so we're on the right track, and nobody else has even factored all this in. So the reason those other organizations are not getting anywhere and can't get anywhere is because the individual people that make up those organizations have to be occupying the right political status in order to have the standing to make it stick.
Well, it's starting to make sense to me, all these things. I've been working on this for a while, thinking about it. I haven't done the study. I just don't have time because I have so many different topics, but it's starting to come together for me at a kind of I need to see a big foundation and understand it from a big picture level. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not from the legal. I'm a business systems engineer background. So from a systems engineering, I need to see the big picture. And so it's starting to come together for me. But I think it's just so hard because the average person can barely understand it. So I would like to see people who are more educated on this coming together and at a bigger picture and just kind of fixing our country, you know. And that's what you're trying to do, but I would like to see it come from the top of our, what we think is the government. Would that ever happen?
Well, the problem is that we have two foreign subcontractors that are running this country. We got the territorial government that's basically been influenced and operated by the Queen of England. And we've got the municipal government that is, at least in title and charter, under the Holy See. And then there's nothing.
Okay, now which one is which one? Like who is Trump? Who is his administration? Was that the municipal?
Trump has got a military commander status. He is he operates as the commander in chief. Right? and he works as the CEO of the United States Incorporated. Okay.
And what one is that? Is that the direction of the Queen or the Holy See?
The Queen has her fangs into the military side of it, the territorial government, and the Holy See has the municipal government, the Washington, D.C. government that the Congress operates as the civil government, as federal civil service. Okay, so you think of, two columns. The military would be over here with Britain, and the other column would be the federal civil service with the Holy See. And both of those things have continued to operate. But those are two foreign federal subcontractors.
So does our president take direction from both, essentially?
In a way, yes, because he has to manage the liquidation of the United States and keep those services continuing one way or another. Plus, he has to manage the military section of it with the territorial government.
Do you have a chart of structure, power structure? Of how the United States fits in all these different entities. Has a chart ever been, diagram ever been created?
Well, there have been several diagrams created, but none of them are really sufficient because it's, unless you've got a wall-sized computer screen, it just gets to be too complex. You almost have to break it down in your mind into layers so that you can conceptualize it.
Well, but do we have a conceptualized document?
Yeah, there's lots of them out there. In fact, there are some on my website that kind of give you that graph-like presentation of how things are related to each other.
That would be great. Can you send that to me and I'll put a link for the listeners to be able to look at that?
Well, I'll talk to Paul Stramer and see if he can do that because I don't have a lot of time and I don't do that kind of thing. I let the computer graphics and all that stuff off to other people.
But that would be
If
great because I think it would help people significantly.
Oh, I do too, and it is a good, it's a good effort. We do have a lot of charts and graphs in my in the book that we published that's kind of set up as a sixth grade level cartoon version of all of this called "You Know Something Is Wrong When," an American affidavit of probable cause, and that has an awful lot of the information outlined in that kind of graphic way. But for a flow chart type thing, there are several flow charts that are helpful, and we've developed a whole bunch of them. And I think that Paul has at least a few of those that he could send you.
Yeah, a conceptual chart on how this whole thing works. That would be great because then I can link it there. What do you recommend people to do besides this chart that I'm going to have? Link, what do you recommend people to read and do to learn more, to become up to date on this, or up to date to learn?
We did the one book that I just mentioned, and we did that for general readership. Our intention was that it should be scaled so that anybody from, say, middle school on could read it and get the gist of it. Okay, so that is our go-to basic primer, and it's called "You Know Something Is Wrong When." An American Affidavit of Probable Cause. It's available on Amazon. I think it's now something like $15 or something. It's a paperback. And then the other one that I created for busy executive types that can think in sound bites is called America, Some Assembly Required. And it just does it in a sound bite fashion. And so as you're reading through it, it's building up in your mind as you go. And that I think in about 3 hours, if you can think in sound bites, in about 3 hours you'll have it all down.
I think in conceptual ideas, and I need a framework. That's how I think, because I think of the more of a systems thinking. That's why I'd like to see a diagram, because I'd like to see the whole big. I'd like to see the big elephant and how the big elephant works together. That's how I look at the world, and so that's what I'm for me. And then I have this framework, and then I keep putting things into this framework. I don't know how other people think, but that's why a diagram would be so helpful for people like me. I know everybody learns differently. But this is great. And your website will have that up for people. We'll have where you have all your books on your website, correct? And links to all that stuff.
Well, there should be links to everything. I can't guarantee that there is. Paul keeps changing things in and out, keeps... featuring this or featuring that, and I don't control that. He's the master of the website, and I just let him roll. But I know that those things are available, and they are around, and if they're not prominently displayed, they are available.
Okay, so, and they can always search your name and find your books on Amazon that way as well.
Right. Right. It's right there. It pops right up. Just look for Anna Reisinger or Anna von Reitz, and they'll show up.
Okay. Well, since we're closing this out, it's been almost an hour, it's been great. It's gone very fast for me. What do you want to say to closing out this show?
Well, I just want Americans to become aware that there's a difference between America and the U.S., that the United States that we've all grown to think of is a foreign government with respect to us. And I know that's hard for people to understand, but that's why there's, for example, the Internal Revenue Code, they call us non-resident aliens. From their perspective, we're aliens, and from our perspective, they're aliens. We're foreign with respect to each other. And I want people to know that Americans have constitutional rights, but British territorial citizens do not, and municipal citizens do not. So if you're mistakenly claiming to be a U.S. citizen, you're claiming to be a municipal citizen or a territorial citizen, and both of those statuses have no constitutional rights. They're not part of that.
Cool.
Right.
Are you there? Yeah. Well, yeah. So I didn't mean to cut you off. I just said something. So I wanted you to continue because you were, whenever there's a pause, that's what's so hard when there's pauses, because I think you're done and then I speak and then you, by the time it gets to me, you've already started. And so that's why I do some editing. So it's hard. So we don't have rights. We think we do. It's one big fraud. The fraud is what bugs me. I think we should be able to, just the fact it's a fraud, we shouldn't be in this situation. We're in a fraud situation. I just don't, it's such a big, they say that big lies are easier to fool people with than small ones. And this is such a huge lie that it's hard for us to go, oh, gosh, how can somebody possibly do this big of a lie on this many people? That's the problem.
But you can recoup your proper status. You can reclaim it. You can declare it. You can make it stick, but if you're never told that you need to do that, you're stuck. It's what's the one contract you can't get out of? The one you don't know exists.
That's for sure. Now, would we not have to pay taxes? Would we get our constitutional rights back? I mean, all of the above?
All of the above. Plus an awful lot of credit and a lot of money that you're owed. See, for example, with the IRS, we were supposed to get mutual offset credit exchange exemptions so that if we were mistakenly charged for income taxes, for example, we could write out a little voucher thing and send it back to them, and they would offset that against what they owe us. That's the way it's supposed to work. See, in a debt system like that, we owe them for services and they owe us for services and goods, right? Think of it as two separate nations. Okay, so they owe us and we owe them. You take it together and you offset it, right? So you owe me 10 bucks, I owe you 100 bucks. We offset it, you don't owe me anything, and I only owe you 90, right? That's how it's supposed to work. But instead, they never gave us our credit. And that's how their debt accumulated. That's how you had this huge, remember, all the U.S. national debt is now, you know, $15 trillion. Well, that's all money that was owed to us. It was never credited. It was never offset against. See, we just kept paying it and paying it and paying it, and they kept taking it as gifts and gifts and gifts and never did the account.
Well, that's the fraud. That's the, well, that's not, that. There's lots of that's the frauds here. Okay.
Right.
Well,
it's,
you know what?
Fraud.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining the program. I'm not going to pretend that I understand this like I want to. It bothers me that I don't. I keep bringing people back and they all have different perspectives. And like I said, I want to see the big elephant, and I'm starting to get better. I think my questions are a little better. I don't, people who haven't or just being introduced are going to have a hard time with this show. They're going to want to watch some other shows that are a little more introductory, I think. But I really appreciate you coming on, and I'll have your website, and I hope to get that graphic from you, and we'll go from there. And thank you so much.
I'll get in touch with Paul and make sure he's got those things ready to go, okay?
Okay. Have a great holiday, Christmas.
You too. We'll talk again. Take care.